Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Economics Report and American Mosaic, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. We are here every day to help you learn and improve your American English and tell you important things at the same time. Today, we will talk about the longest war in America's history. And we will also take you to a part of this country that usually grows large amounts of fruits and vegetables, but is suffering badly from a lack of rain. Let's get started with part one. This week marks the 13th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. The Afghan War is America's longest war. The United States military has been active in Afghanistan longer than in any other conflict on foreign soil. Christopher Cruz takes a look at the war as it enters another year.
U.S.-led coalition forces started bombing Taliban-controlled positions in Afghanistan on October 7, 2001. The raids began less than a month after the September 11th terrorist attacks on the United States. Those attacks killed nearly 3,000 people, mainly in New York City and just outside Washington, D.C. The bombing and invasion of Afghanistan were launched as part of America's War on Terrorism. U.S. officials linked al-Qaeda to what happened on September 11th. The group was based in Afghanistan at the time. Its members lived there with the support of the Taliban, an Islamist group that ruled the country. A lot has happened over the past 13 years. Afghanistan recently swore in a new president. In addition, the two countries signed a security agreement. But the new government faces major economic problems and the threat of growing Taliban influence. In the days after the agreement was signed, Taliban bombers attacked Afghan army buses in Kabul, the capital. Andrew Wilder is watching Afghanistan for the U.S. Institute of Peace, an independent group. He says the bombing shows how dangerous the country is.
The security situation is bad and deteriorating. And I think now getting this new government and political stability is really important so that attention can now focus now on improving the security situation.
Observers say the rise of Islamic State extremists in Syria and Iraq has gained the attention of many Afghans. They remember the 2003 U.S.-led invasion of Iraq and say it took attention away from the conflict in Afghanistan. In recent months, Taliban fighters have made territorial gains. Their strength has raised questions about Afghan security forces and their ability to fight the rebel forces. General John Campbell is the commander of the International Security Assistance Forces, also known as ISAF. He says between 7,000 and 9,000 Afghan forces have been killed or wounded in fighting this year. That is more than the number last year at this time. General Campbell says recent fighting in Helmand Province is partly responsible for the higher numbers.
The last couple of weeks, there's been an uptick with the Taliban trying to make a statement as they close out the fighting season.
Afghan forces have been asked to take responsibility for more of the fighting. while ISAF plans to reduce its force to less than 13,000 in the country by the end of the year. Another problem facing the new government is the Afghan economy. Some observers say the economy is in serious trouble. U.S. officials warn that corruption and the illegal drug trade are strong. Andrew Wilder says there is a reason for this.
It's really going to delegitimize this government, I think, even more so than a flawed election process will be if it can't pay salaries, can't provide social services, and the economy collapses.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani has called on the Taliban to join peace talks. But he said the invitation should not be seen as a sign of weakness. Western nations are promising to help finance Afghan security forces through 2017. I'm Christopher Cruz.
You are listening to VOA, and we are coming to you from Washington. Severe drought has struck California for a third year. The lack of water is affecting farms, cities, and small communities. California's Central Valley is usually fertile, but the lack of rainfall has left hundreds of homes without water. The Porterville Area Coordinating Council provides food and other help to needy families. But right now, the families badly need water. Anna Mateo takes us now to a dusty East Porterville neighborhood among the farms.
A man drives up to an old food package house. The building serves as the headquarters of the Porterville Area Coordinating Council. The man's pickup truck is loaded with plastic barrels. A volunteer fills these containers with water. Nearby, people are loading cars and other vehicles with cases of drinking water. Debbie Martinez lives on a ranch, a large farm that is not connected to the local water system. She has a water well, but she says it is dry.
Yes, it's been 3 years. My neighbors are giving me water, but their wells are going dry too.
California's system of aqueducts carries water to cities and small towns. But this part of Tulare County is far from any city. A lower than normal amount of water under the ground has left some wells with little or no water. Council volunteer Fred Beltran says this situation has affected more than 300 homes in this neighborhood.
And these are all individual wells that are drying up, or they are pumping, or they're pumping poor quality of water, which is either sand, dirt, or high nitrates.
California Governor Jerry Brown recently signed bills to regulate groundwater to prevent shortages. He ordered delivery of emergency drinking water for people who have none. Tulare County water expert Denise England says people need clean water for drinking and cooking.
But the bigger challenge we're facing now is what we're calling sanitation water. So water that's not potable, that's not drinkable, but you can take a shower with it or do your dishes with it or bathe.
Elva Beltran directs the Porterville Area Coordinating Council. She says her group has provided large open-air water tanks for many people. She says, "We have 54 tanks right now." The council gets its money from area residents and religious groups. Much of the work here involves giving water to people like Michael Burrow.
Don't know what else to do. Only water we can get is from the sources like right here. Other than that, I have to buy water, and I don't really have the extra money to buy cases of water.
Officials say providing these families with water is highly important. But for now, The people depend on their neighbors, local government, and private agencies to get the water they need to survive. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is As It Is from VOA.
The Economics Report is next, followed by American Mosaic. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Hilton Worldwide is selling the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City to a Chinese company for $1.95 billion. The buyer, Anbang Insurance Group, will pay one of the highest prices ever for a U.S. hotel. Hilton Worldwide says it will use the money from the sale to buy other hotels in the United States. As part of the deal, Hilton will continue to operate the Waldorf Astoria for the next 100 years. The Chinese buyer has said it will invest in remodeling the famous property on Park Avenue to bring it back to its historical grandeur. Reports say the deal is the largest for a Chinese company buying a U.S. building. Chinese investors increasingly have become interested in U.S. properties. Homes, especially costly ones, are considered a good investment. The National Association of Realtors says China's spending on homes in the U.S. has increased sharply. The trade group estimates that Chinese buyers spent $22 billion on real estate properties in the 12-month period ending in March 2014. That is an increase of 72% over the 12-month period before. Chinese companies also increasingly are seeking businesses outside of the energy and raw materials industries. Last year, a Chinese company bought Smithfield Foods, the largest pork producer in the U.S., for nearly $5 billion. China holds about $1.2 trillion in United States Treasury securities. While these investments are safe, they do not give high returns or yields. China has increasingly looked for other ways to invest its huge trade surplus with the U.S. For many years, Japan has had a large trade surplus with the U.S. In the 1980s, Japanese companies bought important U.S. properties. These included a controlling share of Rockefeller Center, also in New York, in 1989. However, not all of these investments made a profit. The Waldorf Astoria Hotel opened in 1931. It has been a symbol of the wealth and culture of New York City since that time. World leaders and other very famous people have stayed at the hotel. Recently, many delegates to the United Nations General Assembly stayed at the hotel. The Waldorf Astoria was named a New York City landmark in 1993. Other landmarks are the Empire State Building and the Brooklyn Bridge. And that's the Economics Report from VOA Learning English. For more of our programs, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Welcome to American Mosaic from VOA Learning English. I'm Katie Weaver. Moviegoers now have less than a month to wait for the release of the third Hunger Games movie. The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 will open in theaters across the United States on November 21st. The soundtrack that goes along with the film will be released a few days before that. 17-year-old New Zealand singer-songwriter Lord is leading the project. On Monday, she released its first single, Yellow Flicker Beat. Lord has expressed great excitement over her part in the creation of the film. She said she jumped at the chance, although she knew the project would not be easy. She said she knew she would be inspired by the movie's story and characters. This first single shows that Lord was moved by the Hunger Games hero, Katniss Everdeen. In the first movie of the series, Katniss wears a dress from which fire rises when she turns around. She became known as the Girl on Fire. The song Yellow Flicker Beat captures that image of Katniss. The song goes, "My blood is a flood of rubies, precious stones. It keeps my veins hot. The fires find a home in me. I move through town. I'm quiet like a fire."
I'm a princess cut from marble, smoother than a storm. And the scars that mark my body, they're silver and gold. My blood is a flood, the rubies, precious stones. It keeps my veins hot, the fire's found a home in me. I move through town, I'm quiet like a fire. My necklace is a rope, I tie it and untie. And now people talk to me, but nothing ever hits. So people talk to me and all the voices just burn holes.
It is not known who, other than Lord, might appear on the soundtrack to Mockingjay Part 1. The first movie included a shared song from Taylor Swift and the band The Civil Wars. It is called Safe and Sound.
Just close your eyes, the sun is going down.
The music for the second Hunger Games movie, Catching Fire, turned into a hit soundtrack. The British group Coldplay wrote and performed the song Atlas.
Carry away.
The soundtrack for The Hunger Games: Mockingjay Part 1 will be released November 18th.
I'll carry you away.
This year has been a good one for teenage movie lovers. Hollywood has produced several films based on books aimed at young adults. The Maze Runner is the most recent. Moviegoers in the United States bought more than $32 million worth of tickets last weekend for its opening. The Maze Runner is based on a science fiction book of the same name by James Dashner. The book and movie tell about a boy who wakes up one day and cannot remember anything except his name, Thomas. He finds himself in a place called the Glade. It is a green, rural place and the home to many teenage boys. They all perform different jobs in order to survive. Just like Thomas, each boy has lost his memory.
Can you tell me anything about yourself? Who you are, where you came from? Can you tell me your name?
I can't remember anything.
Thomas's job is to run through a maze, a place with many paths, but only one that leads out. Maze runners try to make maps of the maze, which surrounds the glade, keeping the teenagers inside. But there are horrible, hungry creatures on the grounds that make a trip through the maze very dangerous. 23-year-old actor Dylan O'Brien plays Thomas. He is best known for his part in the American television series Teen Wolf. Dylan O'Brien has said he did not expect to get a part in The Maze Runner. But he told PopSugar.com that the part of Thomas was right for him. He said he thinks in the same way as his character. And he said the job of Maze Runner fit him. He said he is good at running. Movie critics have mixed opinions about The Maze Runner. Many critics have noted the movie's similarity to the book Lord of the Flies by William Golding. That book tells about a group of boys who try to create a civil society after a plane crash leaves them alone on an island. But the Chicago Sun-Times newspaper says The Maze Runner sends moviegoers on a much different ride that is very satisfying. The New York Times notes that the movie leaves enough questions at the end to guarantee a second Maze Runner. That film is already in pre-production.
Irish band U2's recent online project with technology company Apple caused a storm of online controversy. The project gave free digital copies of U2's new album, Songs of Innocence, to all Apple iTunes members, about 500 million people, an Apple gift. But a considerable number of members saw it more as a violation. Katie Weaver has more.
The band has a huge following. Millions of people love it. But just as many people may not like the group or may not have even heard of it. This became apparent recently when U2 teamed with Apple. In doing so, U2's new album, Songs of Innocence, was given to all 500 million iTunes subscribers. Sounds like a good idea, right? Well, maybe not so. Much of the public reaction on social media criticized the album giveaway. Many iTunes users say they did not like that the music was forced on them. Some web posts called it an unwelcome surprise. Some tweets even mocked the band's philanthropic image. Apple quickly answered the widespread protests. It provided users with a tool to help them easily remove the album from their iTunes library. U2's album may have been free for listeners, and users did not have to pay to remove it. But for Apple, the incident was far from free. Apple reportedly spent up to $100 million for the marketing campaign. But despite the backlash, U2 and Apple are pleased that the music is out. U2 leader Bono spoke to an Irish radio station about the backlash. He called it overblown. He said the project was a success, except for a technological problem. He said the music was supposed to be available to all iTunes users, but was downloaded to some devices by mistake. I'm Katie Weaver. Do you have a question about American life, people, or places? Send an email to learningenglish@voanews.com or write to us at Learning English, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., USA. The zip code is 20237. We might answer your question in a future show. You can also visit our website at learningenglish.voanews.com for more of our materials. We have audio and video programs. We also have quizzes and other activities to help you test your American English skills. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for American Mosaic from VOA Learning English.